The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but if God really exists, why can't he communicate to human beings? Supposedly he spoke back in the days of the Bible, but why does he not continue to speak today, especially in this crazy mixed up world? Wouldn't a loving God give us some guidance? Actually, he does give us guidance, and he does continue to speak, believe it or not. Even in some of the ways that he spoke in the Bible, he speaks with an audible voice. He speaks with his spirit. He even speaks through dreams, and I will be spending some time talking about this very interesting subject of dream interpretation later in the program. First, the latest news, and you'll be happy to know I'm going to keep my comments about Roman Polanski brief, and this ought to distinguish me from other shows because far too much time has been spent on this story by our media, and you're probably sick and tired of it. I do agree that Polanski should be put in jail. But aside from that obvious truth, there's no new development in the saga. And meanwhile, there are small stories such as Iran's nuclear bomb that may actually be a tad bit important. Have you heard of that one? Have you heard about Iran's nuclear bomb? All right, well, I'm going to take a slightly different angle with this director story. I'm going to question Hollywood directors getting together on behalf of a fellow director and signing a petition for Polanski's amnesty. I find this disgusting, and not because I'm down on the arts. I'm an artist myself. Bible is not my only degree. I also hold a degree in theater from San Jose State University. Over the years, I've written and directed many plays. My problem is this. When Polanski is defended as a director by directors, I get the impression that he would not be defended if he were just some average Joe. Would Hollywood have any other valid reason to protect a man who drugged and raped a 13-year-old, for crying out loud? The message between the lines seems to be, okay, he had a moment of weakness, but he's also an incredible director. How can you think the man is all that bad? Haven't you seen his beautiful movies? Let me tell you something. What is beautiful to me is justice. And justice does not work when a director gets a free pass for something a school teacher or janitor would go to jail for. I mean, who are we kidding? And now, as I promised, on to real news. Iranian President Ahmadinejad denies the Holocaust ever happened, but plans to start one of his own because even though in his mind the Holocaust never happened, it sounds like a pretty good idea to him. He is not shy about this belief. Neither is he shy about his Muslim theology, about the coming of the 12th Imam, a kind of Muslim Messiah to be brought about by a leader brave enough to cause worldwide destruction. This is the man we are dealing with. And so here's the obvious question. Just exactly what will Obama say to Ahmadinejad that will inspire him to dismantle his nuclear bomb? Does our president think he's such an incredible speaker that anyone in the world will be charmed by his voice? Is he that full of himself? Mr. President, just because women faint while you speak, it doesn't mean some religious nut job is going to do anything but yawn while you offer the latest concessions and threats. Ahmadinejad does not lose sleep over the prospect of UN sanctions. He laughs every night about it. Neither does he care, Mr. President, if you send him a dozen red roses and a gift certificate to Macy's and a free Slurpee from 7-Eleven. After all, none of Obama's charm or speaking skills persuaded the Olympic Committee to give Chicago the 2012 prize. But maybe this is a good thing. I've thought a lot about it. It actually may be a good thing. The sooner it occurs to our president that he cannot talk anybody into anything, the sooner the situation with Ahmadinejad might sink in. Maybe, just maybe, this maniac from Iran is going to build and fire missiles no matter how much the American president tells him about change he can believe in. Then again, maybe Obama will learn absolutely nothing. Senator Roland Burris of Illinois wasted no time in blaming the rejection from Denmark on, you guessed it, George W. Bush. But Roland was not the most controversial Democrat of the week. That distinction goes to Alan Grayson, a Democratic congressman from Florida. Listen to what he said on the House floor, knowing that C-SPAN cameras were rolling, of course.
I inquired further, trying to find out exactly what the Republicans' health care plan is, and it's my duty and pride tonight to be able to announce exactly what the Republicans plan to do for health care in America. It's this. Very simply, it's a very simple plan. Here it is. The Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick. That's right. Don't get sick. If you have insurance, don't get sick. If you don't have insurance, don't get sick. If you're sick, don't get sick. Just don't get sick. That's what the Republicans have in mind for you, America. That's the Republicans' health care plan. But I think that the Republicans understand that that plan isn't always going to work. It's not a foolproof plan. So the Republicans have a backup plan in case you do get sick. If you get sick in America, this is what the Republicans want you to do. If you get sick, America, the Republican health care plan is this. Die quickly. That's right. The Republicans want you to die quickly.
I guess he didn't hear Nancy Pelosi's tearful speech about toning down the rhetoric. Oh, that's right. That's right. Her speech was directed only at conservatives. Democrats always use appropriate speech when they make their fact-based intellectual points. And that is why, if you're waiting for our Speaker of the House to rebuke Representative Grayson, you're liable to experience a very long wait. In fact, she already went on record saying Grayson has nothing to apologize for. You just gotta love this consistent little twit from San Francisco who's running our country. But back to Grayson. Nobody outside of Florida had even heard of this guy before he decided to make a name for himself by barking out something outrageous. Since then, the fame has inspired even more, and none of it comes as a big surprise. The latest? Our lack of universal health care and subsequent deaths in the country have resulted in an American version of the Holocaust. Yes, sir, if all else fails, make a Holocaust comparison. Of course, this guy has no problem with the 30 million abortions that have taken place since Roe v. Wade. More deaths than every American war casualty put together. Oh, no. He would never dare compare that to a Holocaust, would he? And how about the Islamo-Muslim terrorists and fanatics who deny the real honest-to-goodness Holocaust and cheerfully announce their plans to annihilate Israel? You see, when people conveniently drop the word Holocaust just to score political points, they water down the impact and truth of the real Holocaust. And now, with a brand spanking new authentic Holocaust right around the corner, nobody seems less concerned than Democrats like Alan Grayson. He loves using the word, but at the end of the day, he is worthless, absolutely worthless when it comes to preparing us for the real deal. Related to the subject of Holocaust, of course, is anti-Semitism itself. Fresh from his 7-year prison tour, Congressman James Traficam was interviewed by Sean Hannity on September 29th. Now, Hannity gave him a chance to take back some controversial statements he had made about Israel. Traficam began by saying, first of all, I am not an anti-Semite. Now, before we go on, I've just got to say this, and I'm saying this as a Jew. Not once in my life have I heard a speech prefaced that way without a bunch of anti-Semitic drivel flowing close behind like lava from a vicious volcano. The words are right up there with, some of my best friends are Jews. Traficam went on to talk about how Israel controls all of America's foreign policy, how Congress is scared to ever cross Israel, how one-sided we have been in the Middle East by always taking Israel's side, and how we deserve our despised reputation from terrorist countries. Yes, sir, Israel controls our government, all right. I suppose that's why administration after administration has forced her to make stupid deals with enemies who do not recognize her right to exist. Oh, no. Traficant is not an anti-Semite, and it's only by an amazing coincidence that he repeats the exact buzz story which spawned the Holocaust and other fun pogroms. Jews are secretly controlling the governments of the world. But Traficant isn't the only one making stupid comments. Bill Clinton last week said the right-wing conspiracy is alive and well. Oh, really, Bill? Anything like the right-wing conspiracy described by your wife Hillary when she was first lady and you were on the floor with Monica? Remember? She said, the real story here, for anyone who wants to go out and find it and write about it, is the vast right-wing conspiracy trying to conspire against my husband. Then, Bill, after you confessed that the whole thing with Monica was true, Hillary failed to apologize to the people she falsely pillaged so as to save your miserable political career and her own. Do you really want to go down this road again? Isn't it enough that you proved you were less effective with foreign affairs and more effective with, shall we say, plain old regular affairs? Had you come clean from the beginning, you might have regained your self-respect. Bill, don't follow your wife by saying bird-brain things about conservatives again. Folks, are you glad you punished Republicans by putting so many Democrats in office? Now they're in charge of everything, including that monster health care bill that nobody seems to like. Last week, a proposed amendment to the bill made the news. Now, it's not like this amendment was not brought up already, even before Obama gave his speech on health care, assuring us that public health care will not fund abortion and that those who tell you otherwise are lying. It was introduced by the Republicans and shot down by the Democrats. What am I talking about? An amendment to the health care bill forbidding public funds for abortion. Already brought up, already shot down in the past. Well, now the amendment last week was introduced again in the Senate and again rejected by the Democrats like a door slammed in the face. Senator Max Baucus of Montana says the bill already reflects federal law, which bars funding for abortion, except in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. Now, that always sounds so important. Saving the life of the mother. Obviously, we want to save the life of the mother. What he is conveniently forgetting to tell you is this. The health of the mother, according to our current law, can be determined any way she and her doctor decide. If having a baby will jeopardize emotional health, the doctor can claim that her life was in danger. How do they plan to get away with this stuff? It's quite simple, really. They are hoping you are just that stupid. Have you found yourself lately remembering a different America and a different life? If not, you should try. Try to remember.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September was green and rain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Try to remember when life was to remember that no one went except the willow. Try to remember the kind of September when love was an ember above. Fire of September that made
Website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Sound more beautiful.
Welcome back to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these discussions, our call-in toll-free number, 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. You can also reach us by email, questions at bobsiegel.net, questions at bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. Here's another letter from Patty in Italy. She says, yes, this business with Polanski is just gross. How dare they act like he should get off just because he makes great movies. Blah. And the next email is from Marissa. She says, your music between commercials is so soothing. I have to ask what it is. Well, thank you, Marissa. I'm glad you like it. You know, one of the perks of having your own radio show is to be able to pick your own bumper music. I pick a wide variety of music, but it's all stuff that I love. Generally, we have rockier pieces coming in from a break, slower melodic pieces going out. It's not like that every time, but most of the time. And the music rotates every week, Marissa. We have actually five completely different sets of bumper music, and I do upgrade it from time to time, and there's eight different pieces each week, although our theme song is certainly always the same. Exodus from the motion picture Exodus is what you hear at the beginning of the show. Now, on last week's program, the one you're referring to, other pieces were from Braveheart and the instrumental group Secret Garden, which is a beautiful group, a combination of an Irish and a Scandinavian sound. I saw them perform once on PBS and ran out and got their CD the next day. Those were the additional mellow musical numbers. The rockier numbers included Chicago playing their famous Does Anybody Know What Time It Is? And His Majesty's Secret Service from the soundtrack of the only James Bond movie that starred George Lazenby. You remember him? He was right between Sean Connery and Roger Moore. Actually, not a bad one of the Bond movies. But if you're listening today, Marissa, you're hearing everything from the rock opera Tommy to the beautiful music of Les Miserables to soundtracks from Lost Horizon, The Magnificent Seven, and Sideways. How's that for three completely, totally different movies? And now this next email is from Pennsylvania. Steve, a fellow Jew from Pennsylvania, not a Jewish Christian, but a fellow Jew. He says, dear Bob, I just read your blog series, The Truth About Israel and Palestine, over at townhall.com, and just had to say bravo. I have been trying to explain much of this to people in my backwards little town of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, for quite some time, and it is very difficult to get people past the numbed mind of postmodernism, as you say. I hope you have heard from readers who woke up after learning the truth from you. Last, I'm honestly sorry to hear that you left the tribe. We could really use minds like yours in these times, but on the other hand, I'm a big fan of C.S. Lewis's apology works, the Screwtape Letters in particular, so I guess it's all good. Shalom, Steve. Well, thank you for the letter and the encouragement, Steve. I have gotten some good comments about my series about Israel and Palestine and some bad ones. There's one guy that keeps writing me saying, maybe your readers would like to hear the other side of this. and I say, hey, they get the other side in high school, they get the other side in college, they get the other side on the media, they get the other side from your blogs. I don't think they need to hear any more of the other side. I think they need to hear this side, which is the true side. It's all documented. You can read that 12-part series. It's a little book, but you can read it electronically on townhall.com. Just go right to my website, in fact. On the front page of my website, you can click right into that blog series. Or if you want the audio version, you can hear an older Bob Siegel show where I spent most of the program talking about that. Now, concerning Obama and the Olympics, Nils in Lemon Grove writes, Bob, I am surprised that nobody is writing about the payback to Daley, referring, of course, to Mayor Daley, by Obama that was behind the whole affair. Obama probably knew that this was a potential bombshell that could blow up in his face. He could have more appropriately restricted the U.S. representation to Michelle and Oprah. Besides, almost half of Chicago didn't want the games anyway, so Obama could win there no matter what he did. However, his chain was yanked, and he had to respond, probably against his better judgment. According to talk radio, Daley and crew would have made millions off the construction projects that would accompany the Olympic Games. Interesting insights, Nils. Well, now, as I promised you at the beginning of the program, we're going to talk a little bit about how God communicates today. We're going to talk about dreams most specifically, but I want to say a few things about communication in general. Even though atheists like to make a loud noise, most people in our country still believe in God, but there's a different discussion about God that is not held frequently enough. Can God talk to people? I submit that most people who believe in some kind of God never expect this God to actually communicate. Whenever prominent ministers claim God spoke to them, they're immediately renounced as loons. Even some of my favorite fellow conservative radio talk show hosts who defend the existence of God and who defend the morality of the Bible and the truth of the Bible have been known to say things like, well, if somebody claimed they actually heard God speak to them right out of the sky, that would be rather odd. And yet the very Bible they defend, the exact same Bible they defend, is full of accounts that portray God doing just exactly that. He spoke out of the sky to everyone who witnessed the baptism of Jesus. He spoke to Moses out of the burning bush. He spoke to Paul in prison. We call the Bible the Word of God because God spoke. If he could speak at one time in biblical days, couldn't he speak today? Now, before I continue, I want to be fair and admit that many popular ministers are lunatics. When they claim they heard from God or got a vision from God, they should consider the possibility that may have just been bad pizza from the night before. But we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yes, the mentally unstable will claim to hear from God, but let me address the mentally stable for a moment. Please enlighten me. What exactly is inherently illogical about the idea of a God who talks? Humans talk. Are we capable of doing something God cannot do? Are we capable of doing something that the very person who created us can't do? And if God is capable of talking, why would God remain silent? Now, the Bible lists a variety of methods through which God communicates. He can speak audibly, as in the cases I just mentioned. He can also use dreams and visions. A vision is kind of like a dream, but you're awake when you have it. He can send prophets. He can send angels, but his primary method of communication today, the one Jesus embraced as most ideal, is communication from the Holy Spirit. You know, I used to say to myself, wouldn't it have been wonderful to be one of Jesus' original 12 disciples, to be able to follow him around and listen to him teach for 3 years? Well, believe it or not, Jesus told his disciples that this was not ideal. Yes, God does it, but it's not the most ideal form of communication that God wants with us. After he left the world, and after the Holy Spirit came to take his place, the disciples, according to Jesus, would be experiencing a much better and closer relationship with God. God's Spirit would indwell them, and the same Spirit would run his thoughts through their minds, and the same Spirit would do the same to those of us who believed because of what the disciples say. You can find that in John 16. We'll talk more about God's communication when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Thank you. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. Why is it that in this crazy mixed-up world where we need guidance so badly, a loving God will not speak and communicate? Well, the answer is a loving God will speak and communicate, but we don't listen. And one of the reasons we don't listen is that people think it's odd that God would communicate. Many of the same people who believe God inspired the Bible don't believe God can communicate today. Now, there is a whole theology today that I disagree with called dispensationalism, which says that since the Bible is here, God does not give visions or dreams or revelations anymore. Now, as with many theologies, these characters are half right and half wrong. It is true that all doctrinal revelation has closed. When the gospel of Jesus Christ came, this was the final message God had about how to be saved, about who he is, about his standards, his nature, his plan for mankind in general. That's why the Apostle Paul says in the first chapter of Galatians, if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel different than the gospel you've already heard, let that person be accursed. So it is true that doctrinal revelation is closed. If somebody listens to a prophet or claims to get a revelation from God and they go, hey, you know, you've always heard that there were three persons in the Trinity, but I'm here to tell you there's actually four. In fact, we shouldn't even call it the Trinity anymore because there's four people in there. No, that person is not talking to God because that contradicts the Bible. Having said that, although doctrinal revelation is closed, what's not closed is personal revelation. God may want to call you to be a missionary. God may tell you who to marry. He may tell you where to work. He may also let you choose to do those things yourself. He's not always going to say those things to you. But personal guidance for your life, God does still communicate, and he can communicate through prophets, dreams, vision, audible voice. But as I told you right before we went to the break, the primary way that he wants to communicate is through his Spirit. I mentioned that when I was younger, I used to think, wouldn't it have been wonderful to have been one of the 12 disciples of Jesus? Well, not all that wonderful. Judas fell away. Evidently, following Jesus for 3 years didn't do him much good. And the disciples were more confused when they were with Jesus. They were constantly scratching their heads, trying to figure out what he said. He warned them again and again that he was going to die when he went into Jerusalem. When he finally did die, they were shocked, flabbergasted, totally caught off guard, totally surprised. This wasn't because Jesus wasn't speaking clearly. Jesus spoke as clearly as anybody could. It was a problem with the disciples. But after the Holy Spirit came upon them, things were different. And Jesus himself said that if he goes away, the Holy Spirit's going to come upon them, indwell them, and the same Spirit would run his thoughts through their mind. Now, admittedly, this is not as flashy as lightning-type special effects. In fact, it's so subtle and so personal, we often take it for granted. We get used to the gentle voice of God to the point where it's only a dull murmur in the background to be ignored. I remember once while praying to God back in college, I got very feisty. I said, God, how come you never speak to me? You spoke to Moses, you spoke to Abraham. Well, why don't you speak to me? I went on and on and on. I whined like a little kid. Suddenly, my thoughts changed, and because they were a little more mature and a little more wise, I realized the Spirit within was speaking, and he said, I'd be happy to talk to you if you would shut up once in a while and allow me to get a word in edgewise. Well, as I promised you, one of the very interesting ways in which God communicates is through dreams. Dreams are an interesting phenomenon all on their own, and let me start out by saying I'm not some nutcase Christian who says that every time you dream, it comes from God. As a matter of fact, I'm of the belief that most of the time, 99% of the time you dream, it does not come from God. Sometimes it does. I had the delightful and fascinating experience a number of years ago of meeting a neurosurgeon who specialized in dream research, which at that time was a wide open field and probably still is today because we know so little about dreaming. And he was one of those people who was postulating theories about what makes us dream. And I had always been fascinated by dreams. And I asked him, I said, what is it that makes them dream? Dreams are so interesting. Lewis Carroll captured this perfectly in Alice in Wonderland, where we're reading this very confusing story. And then at the end, it all makes sense because Alice was dreaming. A lot of times you dream, one person becomes another person. Males become females. You start out in New York City, you end up in Miami Beach, Florida. It all seems natural while you're dreaming. It's only later on when you wake up and you try to analyze it that you realize how nutty it seemed. So I'm asking this friend, this neurosurgeon, what causes us to dream. He says, we still don't know. We probably know under 10% of all there is to know about the human brain. That's why we're so backed up in the field of artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence hopes to go beyond computers and someday completely mimic the human brain. But we just don't know that much about the human brain and what makes us think. But one of the theories they put forth that was very interesting is that the mind acts kind of like a tape recorder. And they've seen this when people have gotten surgery. Sometimes they'll stimulate certain parts of the brain and the person will just keep repeating the same words, almost like one of those old 8-tracks repeating itself. And he said that there was a popular belief that when we're dreaming, what the brain is doing is erasing excess information that we didn't need. And then if we start to awaken while that information is being erased, it comes out as a dream and would explain why dreams are so confusing. Usually you can see why you dreamed. You can understand you're dreaming about a person that you were recently with or recently thinking about. You're dreaming about something you fear. When you have a dream that seems to come out of the blue and you can't figure out for the life of you why you dreamed it, that increases, at least increases, the chance that it came from God. Now, there are many scriptures about dreams. In Acts chapter 2, verses 17 through 20, we're told that dreams would characterize the last days. Dreams, visions, prophecies. It wouldn't just be reserved for a few select people like it used to be in ancient Israel. And in Genesis chapter 20, there was a warning given to King Abimelech, who took Abraham's wife Sarah as his bride, or wanted to take her as a bride, and God warned him, said, you let that woman go or you're dead. In Genesis chapter 28, you have the famous dream of Jacob's ladder, where he actually saw the throne of God and saw angels. And of course, if you haven't read it in the Bible, you've at least seen it on Broadway, and if you haven't seen it on Broadway, you've seen it off Broadway by the 85 billion times Christian Community Theater has put it on. Joseph and his amazing Technicolor dream coat. Joseph had a dream. He dreamed that he was the moon and his brothers were the stars and they were all bowing down before him. He was dumb enough to tell his brothers about the dream. They didn't like it a whole lot, so they beat him up, sold him into slavery. But then when he was in prison, he had other dreams and he interpreted dreams and he eventually interpreted the dream of the Pharaoh. So Pharaoh let him out. We'll be right back.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice, On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Although most of the time when you dream, it's just a dream. Sometimes those dreams do come from God, and the Bible actually talks about dreams quite a bit. Daniel was another person, very similar to the story of Joseph. He interpreted dreams and then was in the king's favor. And then in the New Testament, Joseph, the other Joseph, the Joseph married to Mary, was commanded in a dream to keep Mary as his wife. I think I can understand that one. Can you imagine being engaged to somebody? She says, honey, I've got some good news and bad news. The bad news is I'm pregnant, but the good news is I didn't cheat on you. The baby was a miracle from God, honestly. Well, Joseph didn't believe that, and I don't blame him, but then he was commanded in a dream to not get rid of Mary, to keep her. Actually, they were not married yet. They were betrothed, so he was in the process of going through a divorce. That may sound kind of confusing. How can you divorce somebody you haven't married yet? Well, you need to understand the ancient Jewish betrothal. It was more than what we would call an engagement, less than what we would call a marriage. It was something in between. And it was such a significant commitment that to end a betrothal, you actually got divorced. So that's why he was considering divorcing a woman that was kind of sort of his wife, but not really his wife. They certainly hadn't consummated the marriage yet. And that's what made the miracle of the virgin birth a miracle. And then the wise men were warned in a dream to flee the wrath of King Herod, who was trying to kill them. Peter had a dream, and if it hadn't been for his dream, the Gentiles would never have heard the gospel because he would not have believed that this was something for the Gentiles. He was of the opinion that the gospel of Jesus Christ was just for Jews. Folks, if every instance of dreams were removed from the Bible, we'd be missing a lot. Okay, now what are the purposes of dreams? Well, I already told you, when we just dream, we don't know. We don't know why that happens. But when we're dreaming a dream that God gave us, there's a variety of reasons. It could have prophetic missionary implications. There could be something that God's calling you to do, some kind of ministry. Or it could be helping individuals to get out of a tough spot, maybe yourself. Possibly you'll be dreaming on behalf of a friend. It could provoke Christians to ponder, reflect, seek counsel, and interact with other Christians to examine meanings. We have a tendency to learn better what was not handed to us immediately. And Jesus did both kinds of teaching. Sometimes Jesus taught very clearly. Other times he spoke in parables and he spoke in riddles so that people would have to think about it. Well, a dream is kind of like a parable in some ways, kind of like a riddle in other ways. When you have a dream, it puts you on your knees. It forces you to go to God in prayer and to get closer to him to figure out what it is he's trying to tell you. And by the time you're figuring it out, you're probably going to remember it and take it to heart, heed it, and obey it better than if it was just handed to you on a silver platter. Sometimes a dream is external, something which has little to do with your personality. Sometimes it's internal, and you learn something about your own inner being. A number of years ago, when I was in my late 20s and I was married, newly married at the time, my wife and I lived in a townhouse. Well, I had this dream that I came into the house and experienced something that I'd always wondered about. I had always wondered as a man, as a male, if somebody ever broke into my house and was threatening one of my loved ones, would I have the courage to stand up for him? Growing up as a little kid, I didn't feel I had a lot of courage. When I became a Christian, I felt that God gave me courage. I've certainly stood up in the face of atheists and people yelling and screaming at me. But I had not been tested in every situation. And here was a situation that I'd often wondered about. Well, in the dream, I'm now experiencing it. But of course, when you have a dream, you don't know you're dreaming. You think it's really happening. So what you do in the dream is what you really would have done if it had been real, because you think it's real. It's like a simulation test that even the army couldn't provide for you. And I walked through the house late at night and heard somebody upstairs attacking my wife, and she was screaming. This was only a dream, but I thought it was actually happening. And I remember running up the stairs, and while I was running up the stairs, praying that God would give me courage. And then I woke up, and I never got up there. But I knew I was willing to go up those stairs. Well, let me tell you something. That dream not only told me something about my inner character, it actually happened, but not in that way and not with my wife. Not long after I had that dream, I was working at my office at my church in the evening, and I heard somebody screaming. It sounded like the voice of a teenage girl. Now, when you hear screaming from dusk to dark, it occurs to you that people may just be goofing around. So there's a moment or two of denial. But finally, it turned into this blood-curdling scream, "Help me, please, somebody help me." And I said, "Okay, God, it's not that I'm not scared. Courage means you do the right thing whether you're scared or not." I opened the door of my office and literally ran the direction of the scream. I didn't know what I was going to find. Was there going to be one perpetrator? Were there going to be many? Was I going to have to fight off one person or five people? Was somebody going to have a gun? I didn't know. But I ran that direction and I said, "God, give me courage. I'm doing this by faith." And it felt exactly like the scenario in the dream. Well, sure enough, there was a man on top of a woman bending her arm back over the lawn. There was an elderly couple across the street just staring. I just love that. That's what most human beings do when there's danger. They just stare. What's that old phrase from, I believe his name was Edmund Burke, "The best thing that can make evil spread is for good people to do nothing." But anyway, I ran up there. I said, "What's going on here?" As it happened, the guy got kind of scared when he saw me, and he ran off right away. But it was very interesting because in the dream, I knew that that's what I would do if that happened. And then not long afterwards, it happened. Okay, other principles of dream interpretation. First of all, if you're having a dream and you're wondering, it occurs to you that it may have come from God, but you're not absolutely sure. First, evaluate the likelihood that you would have dreamed this on your own. Second, evaluate the frequency of the dream. Is this something that's constantly reoccurring? Three, now, if you're dreaming about a person, speak to the person for confirmation. Maybe you're dreaming about somebody for some reason. There's nothing wrong with walking up to somebody and said, "Lately I've been dreaming about you. Is anything going on in your life? Is there anything you can pray about?" When I was married, there was a couple. They were friends with us, and I'm not going to tell you their names because I'm not a gossiper. They don't even live in San Diego anymore, but I'm still not going to tell you their names because that's just the kind of person that I am. But this was a couple that was that we started out as friends, and then they were having problems with us, probably because we were in the ministry, and they noticed that the pastor and his wife had problems and had marital arguments like everybody else. They were kind of disillusioned. We felt kind of hurt about that. Well, one night I had a dream about this couple, and I'll explain that dream when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. We've been talking about dream interpretation, and I was mentioning a painful incident from my past. A lot of times when you're a pastor, and I was a pastor at one time, people come up to you and they say, oh, I don't want you to just be my pastor. I want you to be my friend. And then they want to get close to you. And then you let them get so close that they see how you live at home. They see that you have arguments with your wife like everybody else. Then they get very disillusioned because they were expecting you to be perfect. When the whole idea about Christianity from the beginning is that none of us are perfect. All of us are sinful. That's why we're here. Well, we had a couple friends like that. I'm leaving them nameless. And I had this dream that we had gone to the wild animal park with them, a place that the four of us like to go. While we were at the wild animal park, I chose that time to tell them how hurt I was and how I missed their friendship and how I wanted them to stop judging us. I awakened from my dream. And then the first thing my wife told me in the morning was that this couple had called and said, hey, why don't we go to the wild animal park today? I don't think that was a coincidence. And I used that, obviously, as a sign from God. And while we were at the wild animal park, I came alongside the husband and I did begin talking to him. So that was one of our interpretation principles. If dreaming about a person, speak to the person for confirmation. Two other principles that we went through already. Evaluate the likelihood that you would have dreamed this on your own. If the dream did not come from God, you can usually figure out why you dreamed it. You're dreaming about something that's been on your mind, something you've been worrying about, some kind of person that's been in your life recently. Now, our next principle, principle four, bring the dream to the body of Christ. Bring the dream before the church. We have modern-day Josephs. We have modern-day Daniels. We all have different gifts. And a lot of times when God communicates, it's like putting the pieces of a puzzle together. He'll give one person the ability to speak in a tongue, which is speaking a language you've never learned. But he'll give somebody else the ability to interpret it. Or one person will have a prophecy, but it'll be in part. And we're told in Corinthians, if a prophecy comes to a second person, the first one should sit down. And they said two or three prophets should speak. And the idea here is that you want confirmation. You want more than one witness. And maybe one person will have a dream from God, but he won't know what that dream means. Well, a number of years ago, when I was in Santa Barbara, we had a woman named Susan. Now, she came out of a Catholic background, but she did not understand what it meant to be born again. And I'm not trying to say anything cruel to Catholics. There are many Catholics who are born again, and there are many Protestants who do not understand what it means to be born again. Susan, on the other hand, had the typical situation that many have in both Catholic and Protestant churches. She grew up in the church all of her life, didn't have a clue what it meant to have a personal relationship with God. Because again, sometimes even when we're around clergy, they're of the opinion that if God were to actually talk, that would be odd. But anyway, she got involved in our group out at UC Santa Barbara, and she came on a retreat. Well, I have a good friend. His name is John Mattson, brilliant teacher, and also somebody open to the mystical side of Christianity. And I always appreciate when a minister is that balance, where they could take the academic, intellectual side and say, we're not going to throw our brains out the window. But on the other hand, we're not having a love affair with the Bible and the textbook on the shelf. We believe in a real, living, loving God who wants to put his arms around us. And that's who this man was, a wise man, a man open to the mysticism. Well, Susan had this dream that just was really chilling and really haunting. She went to John Mattson and told him the dream. He did not betray her confidence because after he interpreted the dream for her, she prayed to receive Christ. And with her permission, he explained the dream to me. Well, here's what Susan dreamed. She dreamed that she was up on a mountain overlooking Los Angeles. the whole city had blown up in a nuclear holocaust. If she turned the direction she had come up the mountain, she'd be going back into the city. In front of her were a group of people dressed like monks. They had clerical garb, they had hoods, they had robes. And yet there was something very soothing coming from these clerics. They were chanting, and the chanting was giving her a very warm feeling, and she wanted to follow them, but she was afraid. Okay, now I've had dreams, and I've had dreams that have come from God. I do not have the gift of dream interpretation, at least not frequently. If you came to me, I'd probably send you to somebody like John. John immediately interpreted the dream. And see if this doesn't just make sense. He said, the reason you saw people in clerical garb is because of your Catholic background, and God was giving you an image you related to. The reason you saw the city of Los Angeles is you grew up in Los Angeles. The reason you saw Los Angeles blown up is not because we're going to have a nuclear holocaust. If we ever do, that has nothing to do with your dream. It's representing that your old way of life is over, and you want to follow these new people. And the clerics, all dressed like that because of your Catholic background, really represent the brothers and sisters in Christ whom you are having this retreat with, and you want to follow them, but you're frightened. She 100% agreed that that was the correct interpretation of the dream. Now, obviously, our final interpretation principle, if the dream comes true, it's God's way of showing you that you are in the right place. And sometimes it's not just a dream. God could do something very similar to a dream, and it can be in the form of what we call deja vu. I had a friend named Mike. Now, I had graduated from Denver Seminary. I went only in the summertime. My friend Mike, a really good, close Christian brother who lived in Arizona where I was living at the time, he was going to go to seminary year-round, and he was going to move in. So getting ready for the fall, he happened to arrive out there while I had a couple of weeks of summer school left. In fact, it was my last summer at seminary before I was going to graduate. Mike and I didn't get to go to seminary together, which is too bad because it would have been fun. He was a good friend. Well, I helped him and his wife move all day, and then afterwards they took me out for pizza. I don't remember what I ordered, but I can probably tell you what I ordered. I ordered pepperoni because never in my life have I gone to a pizza parlor and not ordered pepperoni. So even though I don't remember ordering the pepperoni, by faith, I know I must have ordered pepperoni. Now, I'm sure you're considering this a very significant detail, and you're glad I padded the story out with that. All right. I'll get back to the real story. We're having pizza. And suddenly Mike gives me the strangest look. And I said, what's going on? He says, I just had a feeling of deja vu. I have been through this before. Maybe I dreamed it, but I once had this experience. I was in the pizza parlor sitting here with my wife. You were sitting across the table from me. Well, I had no idea what that meant. And I asked him, I said, what do you think that means? He said, I think it means that I made the right decision coming to seminary, and God is confirming it. Now, next week, we'll continue this discussion. I'll start it a little bit in the couple of minutes we have left, because it's not just about dreams. It's about actually discerning principles for God's will in your life. And as I told you, God speaks to us in many different ways. But let me start out this week by giving you a couple of preparatory steps. Step one, examine yourself and ask, what do I want? Now, that's a very important question, because often, when people are thinking about the will of God, they think God is this celestial killjoy who does not actually want what they want. They think they're supposed to make a list of everything they want, and the opposite of the list is God's will. Well, there are times when God asks us to do things we don't want to do. Most of the time, God does want you to be happy, and we'll talk more about that next week. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.